mind if I take my sweater off? Well, I think in the confines of one's house, one should be free of clothing and inhibitions. Oh, inhibitions are always nice because they're so nice to overcome. I will do anything you ask. You should never be ashamed of things like that. I mean, you mustn't be. You know, there's nothing wrong. Nothing is wrong. I think the only way that any of us can ever be happy is to let it all hang out. You know, do it all and fuck it.
Welcome to this episode of Just the Disc. My name's Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. I have a podcast favorite who I have neglected for far too long joining me on the show tonight, Miss Stephanie Crawford. Welcome back. It's been too long, Steph.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a little while.
I apologize. I have been a little crazed and I've been doing a lot more solo recording just because sometimes I have been a little stressed with the both shows and I just need to get something done. And not that dealing with you is stressful, but I've been just not dealing with anyone.
Oh no, I'm a notorious diva. I understand. I get it.
That is definitely not the case. But I appreciate you coming on and I know my listeners will be happy because there have been complaints.
Oh,
the complaint box is full. And you have been demanded to be returned, and I'm glad that we can do this now.
Checks in the mail, guys. Thanks.
So tonight, we're doing something slightly different. We haven't quite done this before, I don't think, with you and I, and that is that we have a main pick, which is going to be Clute from 1971, and then each of us has chosen something to pair it with. And neither of us knows what the other person is pairing with the movie. So we'll start with Clute, and then we'll go into those pairings. And I'm very excited to hear what Stephanie has picked for her pairing. But first, Clute.
Who is it?
Miss Daniel, my name is Clute. John Clute. I'd like to talk to you.
What do you want?
My name is John Clute.
You said that.
I'm an investigator. I'd like to ask you some questions about Tom Gruneman.
Who?
Tom Gruneman. He wrote you some letters.
Wow.
He was a research engineer at the Tuscarora Laboratories in Pennsylvania, and he disappeared from there last December. And I've been hired to look for him.
Why?
You know what I'm talking about, Miss Daniel.
Honest.
Can I ask you some questions, please?
Do you have any identification? You're not a cop. You're not FBI. You're a private detective. And you just want to ask me some questions.
Uh-huh. Steph, what's your history with this movie? Had you seen it a bunch, or when was the first time you saw it?
No, this is another one where I sound uncouth. I didn't say unclute. I wanted to, but I didn't. I only saw it for the first time earlier this year when it was on Amazon Prime. I had heard of it for years and years, and it's one of those ones where you kind of stick it in the old memory bank and be like, one day I'll get to that. I'm a classy movie watcher. I'll get to Clute. But I finally got to it this year,
cool. And
I was blown away.
Oh, nice.
Thankfully, non overhyped film, one that earned every bit of its reputation.
Very cool. I'm very happy to hear that. Yeah, it's one for me that I think the first time I watched it, which it was a while ago, it was probably on VHS at some point, but I don't think I could fully appreciate it. And seeing it, especially now in this Blu-ray, where it looks fantastic, I think I understand why maybe I didn't appreciate it as much. Because so much of it is about the visual. I mean, there's a lot to it. It's got so much going on. But I feel like in a VHS, I was thinking, man, how could I have possibly appreciated what Gordon Willis is doing here on some crappy VHS transfer? That just doesn't do this particular movie justice. So,
oh, I'm with you there. The Amazon Prime was not a restored copy. It was pretty muddy, and I did appreciate it more here.
That's cool. Yeah, no, it's one of those things where I think people, you know, people love All the President's Men. This is an Alan J. Pakula film, and it's part of like an unofficial loose trilogy of paranoid thrillers. And so it goes, I think this film, then I think then
The Parallax View.
Is that next? Oh, in 74, mm-hmm. and then All the President's Men. But I always forget yes. that Clued is the starter. Clued is the one that kicks it off. And Clued is the one where he's sort of, I don't know, finding his sea legs, if you will, as a thriller director, because he's working with Gordon Willis for the first time. And, you know, he definitely had made a point in one of the special features interviews to say how big of a deal that was for him in terms of finding his style. So I guess I forget this is kind of like the beginning of, you know, these three great movies, which I consider to be three of the greatest thrillers like ever. I don't know how you feel about the other two in that trilogy.
The Parallax View, I need to see again. I probably watched it about 10 years ago and I remember enjoying it, but it's one I can't really speak on because I dearly need to revisit it.
I think you'll like it when you see it again.
I think I will too. All the President's Men was, I was in newspaper in high school. It was a journalism class hybrid, actually running the school newspaper class, and our teacher took it very seriously. She took citations and format and plagiarism as seriously as any city newspaper would. And she had a big impact on me. And early on in the class, she showed us All the President's Men. And she's like, okay, this is a movie. It's a little stylized, but this is how you should be like approaching it. And we're like these earnest little high school students like, yeah, that's going to be us. And I think Dick, which the 1990 film that was like a comedic take on the Watergate scandal, came out around the same time. So that, boy, that burrowed itself into me. And I became obsessed. I've seen that movie so many times. I adore it.
We heard that tape.
What'd you hear?
You kick checkers and you're prejudiced and you have a potty mouth.
You're a bad man.
You stinking little idiots, get the hell out of here. You don't ever come back here again, okay? You don't mess with the big boys.
That's one where I'm really due for a rewatch because for whatever reason, I saw it when it came out on VHS, but then it didn't click with me then, but I'm quite sure it would click with me now. And I just haven't gotten back to it. And I feel like, it came out on Blu-ray or something within the last few years. And, I've heard more people talking about it and I'm like, God damn it. I got to get back to that. Cause I keep hearing, you know, how clever it is and you know, how funny it is. And it's just, I'm due.
Absolutely. And Zodiac, which I'm a huge fan of, the first time I saw that, I was like, ooh, this movie and All the President's Men, they're like brothers. That would be a great feature.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great. In fact, Zodiac was one I considered as a double for this, too, honestly. But you're right. It's much more of a better pairing with All the President's Men. Yeah, but it does. And I'm sure I haven't heard Fincher specifically interviewed about it, but I know that he is a 70s guy and that he must be a fan of Pakula and he must be a fan of all three of these movies because there's a similar sense of dread that's palpable in Zodiac that you can feel in all three of the thrillers from Pakula in the 70s, I think.
No, I agree. And it's funny with Pakula, he did some, he worked in the 80s and 90s, obviously, but when I think of him, I automatically just put him in the 70s. Yeah. I don't know, is there a secondary Mount Rushmore where we can fit more directors?
I mean, he would definitely qualify for secondary for sure. Yeah, I think so. There's just so much good stuff. But yeah, I think the thing is he's still a little underappreciated. And, you know, the fact that this movie and Parallax View 2, I feel like are a little, I don't know, they're not under the radar, but they're not as well known as All the President's Men. So when you see that by itself, it's a great movie, but you don't necessarily go, he's a great director. I mean, you do, but like you don't think of it in terms of breadth of work unless you've seen those other two movies. And then you go, holy shit, this is incredible. So because, you know, you'll have certain directors that'll have one big great movie and then maybe nothing else. And I think sometimes people see something like All the President's Men and they go, oh, that was great. And then they don't go any further or they don't look it up. And I don't blame them because a lot of times there isn't anything else to find. But in this case, if you enjoyed All the President's Men and you haven't seen The Parallax View and you haven't seen Clute, I can't recommend them enough, because you'll appreciate each one even more once you've seen the others. I think that's how it will work.
What if I really like Sophie's Choice and that's the only thing I've seen from him?
I don't know. Maybe that's a different... maybe these aren't your movies. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously a great film, but I should really briefly just run down what Clute is about. I always forget to do that at the top of the show, but basically the story is that there is a man that goes missing, and I think he's friends with Donald Sutherland's character. Is that the sense you got? Because he's at dinner with him at the beginning and everything?
I guess maybe like a friendly, quote-unquote, professional relationship.
Yeah, there's a great sequence at the beginning of the movie where there's a dinner sequence, and we see the guy who goes missing sitting in a chair, he's smiling, and then we cut to, and Soderbergh addresses this in one of the interviews, we cut to an empty chair, and it's nighttime, and suddenly we realize it's however many months later or whatever passage of time, and he's not in the chair, and it's symbolic of him being gone. And so the next scene is basically one of his co-workers in this corporation talking to John Clute, played by Donald Sutherland, and they're talking about trying to figure out what happened to him. And so it's a police detective sort of going through, and I'm not going to go into detail about that stuff because it's kind of cool to hear them describe it. But the gist of this thing is that eventually the police sort of run out of leads, and they can't find the guy, and they're going to give up. Mm-hmm. And Clute himself takes over the case. And what he has to go on is a prostitute. So he needs to go and find this call girl and see if he can track down some other leads based on that. And the call girl is played by Jane Fonda. She plays Bree Daniels, for which she won an Academy Award. And she is really fantastic in this movie. And so the story is just sort of the two of them, the detective and her, feeling each other out, being resistant initially, but then sort of working together. And then sort of a potential growing conspiracy that may entangle them, that kind of thing. And I don't want to go into too much more detail about it if we can, just because I think a lot of what's enjoyable about it is just seeing things unfold.
No, I agree. And it is, I think, a very well done mystery, a thriller, but I'm more interested in the mood. I love the character study aspect of it. When I get into the nitty gritty of the more like whodunit part of it, I guess that might be the least interesting thing to me. Yeah, not because it's thin or not well done. And just everything else is so compelling.
Absolutely. No, I think I agree with you. I almost kind of wish there was, you know, I wouldn't change anything about it ultimately. Cause I love the movie, like love the movie, but yeah, the ending, you know, is satisfying and that's great, but it could have gone another way. And I would have been fine with that too. Because everything else is so, I don't know, like you said, there's the mood to it. And I mentioned Gordon Willis before, and he is just one of the, I mean, people know this, but he is easily one of the greatest cinematographers ever. And he is in full Godfather mode on this movie. So he's doing things, he's just so gutsy in terms of the amount of light that he will let things play under. You know, he really is okay with only showing half of Jane Fonda's face, or, you know, just part or a silhouette. I mean, the man is like an artist beyond. I was watching it and I was just like mouth agape, kind of blown away and realizing, wow, there really is so much artistry to cinematography. And it's not like I forget that, but occasionally you see something that brings it into full focus.
Right.
Pun intended. And you just get it. You're just like, wow, these people, these technicians are artists on the absolute highest level. And yeah, I just was blown away this time watching it again. This Blu-ray looks fantastic, so the blacks were that much more resonant. And yeah, I have a little clip of him talking about simple versus simplicity, and, you know, just how the way that he lights things, or simple versus simplistic. And it's a really great little quote from him just talking about how basically people get overly complicated with their lighting, and he's like, that's no good.
We're in a world now and in a business where people perceive complexity as good. It's not good. Complexity is not good. People don't understand the elegance of simplicity. There are very few people left that do understand it. I mean, the whole idea is if you take a sophisticated idea, reduce it to the simplest possible terms so that it's accessible to everybody. And don't get simple mixed up with simplistic. That's not it. It's how you mount and present something that makes it engaging. Simplistic is doing it badly. You know, I mean, you know, if you hit somebody in the face with a pot, I mean, you know, that's simplistic. Simple is your choices. You know, it's what, you know, one light coming through a window might be quite beautiful. That's all you need. You don't need six other lights because why are you doing all of this? By habit or by need? You know.
But he's just, I don't know, he's just one of those guys where you're like, wow, this guy's just on another level completely. And the fact that he's working with Michael Chapman, who would go on to shoot The Last Detail, Taxi Driver, and Raging Bull, among others, after he worked with him, it's also clear that Gordon Willis, I liked, maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but like, I think you have Pakula here in Clute working with Willis and Michael Chapman, and then both guys go off and do some really amazing work, and I don't think that that's coincidental. I think Gordon Willis is just that good and that helpful to work with and whatever. So I don't know. I'm probably giving it too much, but.
No, it's really a superlative group for just like a powerhouse gang for the 70s. And I think you're absolutely right about his work. And you mentioned him being a technician, cinematographers being technicians, which is true. But maybe that's why we're kind of surprised when we're able to enjoy their work and see a little bit more in this, because in Clute especially, you can tell he was paying attention to the characters, especially with lighting Jane Fonda. He used a lot of the secrecy in her life and the uncertainty and being able to actually see that not only in her acting, but in everything surrounding her. It's very affecting. And I think that might be why it knocked you off your feet a little bit, because he was really paying attention to all the emotional beats as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it is a perfect example of cinematography contributing in such a huge way to the storytelling, you know, to the characters, to the sense of, again, dread. And there's just some amazing shots in this movie. There's one particular shot that they use a couple times of characters going up an elevator in a textile factory. It's such an amazing shot because it's from overhead and the elevator shifts position in the frame as it comes up. So it gets larger in the frame and seems to sort of slide over because it's kind of at a canted angle, sort of. But it goes from, you have like blackness surrounding it and it's smaller and then it gets bigger. It's just, there's so many great shots like that. Overhead shots, people being watched, kind of creepy shots. It's just, and the score by Michael Small is...
No, it's stunning.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, you know what is, it's really neat because I went and listened to like a suite of it. My initial notes were like, this is a horror movie score. And then I listened and there's all these different parts to it. He's got jazzy bits and he's got all kinds of stuff going on. But the stuff you remember is that opening stuff that, like, I don't know if it's like a xylophone or whatever, but it's this percussion that's so creepy.
Yeah, there are a lot of things about Clute that made me think of Giallo. That scene you mentioned, especially the way it was filmed, the way the tension was built, it really made me think of more of an Italian horror thriller.
I can't believe I didn't think of that. That's totally on the money. Yeah.
And yeah, the attention, not only to the music, which is beautiful, but just the sound work. And I'm not someone who always notices that.
Me neither, honestly.
But it's crazy. This was Pakula's second film. I really feel like everyone came together because this is kind of a hard concept to pull off. And there are moments in here where I almost feel like, as often as I felt the giallo, I won't say influence because I have no idea, but just the general feeling I got from it, there are some moments that felt like a really great exploitation film. Like some lines like, that bitch stole my mink. I never come with a John. Like you could totally see that in an exploitation film.
No, you're totally right.
But there's some magic going on. Everything came together.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've got Jane Fonda giving this incredible performance for which she was, you know, classic story. She was very cautious and basically didn't want to do it, didn't think she was right for it, did all this research, you know, lived in the apartment on set for like 3 days, stocked the refrigerator, stocked books, just, you know, so that she, to really get into the character. And it really pays off. Like she inhabits this woman in such an incredible way. It's one of the great characterizations of the 70s for me. And Donald Sutherland is, I mean, I hate to say his usual good self, and not that Jane isn't always good too, but yeah, Sutherland's character is really an interesting, not quite opposite, but sort of, in terms of he's just very reserved. And I mean, they're both guarded characters, so that's interesting, but yeah, he's just very different, but he's equally good and stoic. And I don't know. I like what he's doing too. He always comes to play, but man, yeah, there's so much good stuff coming together. And then I always forget that Roy Scheider's even in this movie.
Okay. So I'm going to jump in a little bit here. Donald Sutherland is one of my favorite actors. Nice. And what he does in Clue is so incredible to me because you see something like Alex in Wonderland.
I'd like to do a picture about Christ. Sidney Poitier is Christ. He's probably black anyway. Or do a picture about Sidney with Christ as Sidney.
Which is such a unique energy. And you really need to be able to channel a crazed kind of charisma to play roles like that. And he did it often, but in Clue, I think it's so funny the film is called Clute. It's almost like calling the film audience because he's pretty much us. We're just kind of watching Bree the entire time and we're admiring her and we're afraid of her and we're trying to learn from her as she's trying to figure everything out. She's intelligent, but she's not all-knowing and she's living kind of a tough life. So it's just seeing them clash. It's pretty wonderful.
Actually, I'm having a conversation with a very nice cop. He's not a cop, actually. He's a private detective.
Is that how you get most of your dates? Somebody gives your name to somebody else?
Most of them, yeah.
And that how you met the man who beat you up?
I don't remember. It was 2 years ago. God.
Well, how else do you get dates? Pimps?
Oh, you're very square, Cookie. No, pimps don't get dates for you. They just take the money.
The police have given me a list of names. I'd like to ask you about them. Frank LeGourin.
Look, I'm sure this is going to amuse you, too. But I'm really trying to get away from all that.
What about this evening, the old man?
You saw that? God damn you! He's 70 years old. His wife is dead. He's been cutting garments since he was 14. He's maybe in his whole life had 1 week vacation, and I'm all he's got. And he never lays a hand on me. What harm is there in that? And what's your bag, Clute? What do you like? You a talker? A button freak? You like to have your chest walked around with high heel shoes? Maybe you like to have us watch you tinkle?
Okay.
Or do you get it off wearing women's clothes? Goddamn hypocrite squares!
Okay.
And I think it says a lot about Donald Sutherland that this is a role you don't take if you're an egotistical actor because he portrays a lot, especially just his face. There's a lot of integrity there. And there are times where you're like, ooh, he might be a little bland here. And then you'll see a flash of like, oh no, he does have a sexual interest that can come out and he can be violent if someone he cares about is in trouble. And I love him in this. It could so easily be nothing, but he really pulled it together. And Roy Scheider, I'm with you because to me, even when he's like playing Fosse, which was a lot to do, he just always has this kind of welcoming warmth to him usually.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but he's almost a little shark-like in this one.
Definitely.
It almost feels like his eyes are darker. And it's one of those roles where I see him, I'm like, oh, it's Roy Scheider. Great. And then as the film goes on, you see him more, I recognize him less.
Yep.
Because it's not anything I'm used to seeing him in. And oh, it's a hell of a thing when there's a role like that. As it goes on, you're just like, who are you?
I love it when it mostly works well when an actor is so iconic for certain roles, and so you have a general feeling when you see them on screen, and that works against, you know, what's actually happening, you know? And so like you say, you're just like, oh, it's him. And then, you know, for instance, there's a scene where Brie comes in and sits down next to him and lays her head on his shoulder, and he grabs her by the hair and pulls her head back. And it's just this very creepy, violent moment. And then they sort of settle into each other again. And I'm just like, oh, that is such a, wow, that just speaks volumes to what their relationship is. I mean, for those that don't know, he's basically her pimp in the movie. And it's just a really unique relationship. I don't know. I've always been, I guess, intrigued by the pimp-prostitute relationship, especially as portrayed in cinema. It's very tricky to figure out and tricky to portray, I think, but they do an interesting job in this movie of portraying it. And yeah, I don't know. I just think he always adds something to any movie he's in. And the fact that I forgot he was in this, I don't know. I just kind of seems silly to me, but I guess there's just so much good stuff going on in this movie that my brain just let go of one thing.
Yeah, no, it's a silent, effective moment of dominance and submission. And before in the film, we see her scared and everything, but normally she's pretty self-assured. She knows she's great at her job. She's beautiful and she's intelligent, and she knows how to talk to everyone. But with him, it's almost like she looks like a beaten animal or something. It's really disturbing. It's one of the most disturbing scenes of the film, in my opinion.
Absolutely. No, it really does take it off in this direction that, yeah, no, it's another layer. But yeah, I don't know how much further we can go with the film without starting to give stuff away, but I gotta say, I love the way that it gets sort of more and more tense as it goes. And it has a couple scenes in particular that still kind of freak me out. And I think especially there was a scene, I think Pakula's describing, where she's trying to seduce him and then something happens and her energy completely changes, and then it becomes this like really terrifying thing. And it's like not like too many scenes I've ever seen in a movie in terms of the shift, right?
Right.
In terms of the energy change, it's just suddenly like, what? Wow. And then after that scene, I remember it didn't happen to me this time, but the last time I watched it after that scene and basically after the movie, I was legit creeped out. Like, I was kind of like looking over my shoulders. I was going upstairs. I mean, it was like a horror movie. The last time that happened to me was when I watched It Follows or something like that.
Wow.
You know, just, you know, it was like that kind of effect on me. But like I said, that didn't happen this time, but regardless, it's the movie that has that potential to veer into that almost horror territory. And I think that's really unique, and especially for an early 70s film that's, you know, ostensibly just a thriller. It just, the atmosphere is so thick and so frightening. Yeah, it just really carries.
Yeah. I think at one point, Pakula referred to it as a melodrama. Like, boy, way to underestimate everything. Wow.
Well, yeah, that's not what I would say, but that's interesting. I mean, he's an incredibly, like, one of those guys where you hear him speak and you're like, oh boy, he's smart. and so you can just tell if he's thinking of it in that way, like that's what he's worked out, and that's how he approached the material or something. And whatever he did works perfectly. But yeah, he's, again, another one who's just on another level, like Gordon Willis.
Yeah, this was his second film.
It's crazy.
Are you kidding me?
That's crazy. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have any other quick thoughts on the movie before we do some special features talk?
I would say no. I think we were perfect and we covered everything. important without spoiling anything, which I think is important.
Yeah, I really, I think for me, it's just one of those special films that I really want people to enjoy and, you know, I just don't want to talk about it too much. Like, it's that good. I'm just, trust us, it's a great movie. Watch it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of the features here? I really loved the Jane Fonda, Ileana Douglas interview. Thought that was pretty great.
Mm-hmm. That was great. Douglas has become a great interviewer, in my opinion. But yes. I also really like it when two people who work in the same field, actresses, they almost have a shorthand. So Douglas is... she's good enough at what she does, and she's great enough at it to lay it out for all the listeners, but you can tell they have kind of a connection.
Yeah,
where Fonda is very at ease with her, and it's a great talk, and she asks really wonderful, interesting questions.
What I'd read about was, as you were doing this research, you thought that maybe you were not right for the part.
I was just beginning to understand feminism. It wasn't in my body, but it was becoming part of my thought process. I was trying to understand the woman's movement, which I had been resistant to for a long time. And as I was driving across the country, I remember thinking, well, if I'm a feminist, I can't play a prostitute. And I called up a friend of mine, a jazz singer named Barbara Dane. Mm-hmm. Who was a feminist, and I said, you know, I'm concerned, I'm supposed to do this movie about a call girl, and I just don't know if it's politically correct. I don't know if I use those words, but that's what I was asking about. And she said, well, send me the script, and I did. And she called me and said, listen, this script gives you a chance to go deep. Mm-hmm. And if you can go deep into any human being, that is feminism, because it allows you to show an entire human being.
Well, and she's just such a movie fan. She's such a cinephile.
Yes,
I just think she's awesome. I mean, if you listen to her podcast for even a minute, you'll get a sense of just how deep into movies she is. And I just think she's amazing. So she's coming at it from our point of view. Like, if you or I were in the room with Jane Fonda, I don't think I could handle myself, but
no, I'd be giggle crying. But if we were cool, yeah.
But she's like, from the cinephile's point of view, she's sitting in for us, mm-hmm. and asking questions and, you know, generally appreciating the movie, which I think is great for Jane Fonda to hear, because it's coming from a place of true appreciation, true fandom for both. You know, just as a cinephile, but also from a craftsmanship, you know, I do what you do. It's just a really great interview. Like, I kind of want her to do interviews on all Criterion Discs. I just think she's a great fit for their brand.
That would be great. And I might be overthinking it, but there is a common theme throughout Clue where it's one of the few times we can get inside the Brie character a little bit, and it's when she's visiting her psychologist.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess in the script originally, it was a male psychologist, but Fonda said this character would not open up to a man like this. So it's a female psychologist in the film. And I was almost kind of thinking about that when Fonda was telling Douglas about how she was just truly getting into becoming a feminist. And that's one of the things she struggled with about playing a call girl, because she's just like, well, is this going against everything I'm starting to learn about and become passionate about? So I don't know. It's just a parallel I made.
No, that's good. I think that's not an off observation. I think that's very possibly something that they maybe tied together. Because yeah, those therapy scenes are really pretty great. And Pakula talks about how he wasn't going to do it, but then he thought if he could combine it with, you know, intercut it throughout the film, more or less, that it would help it feel more interesting.
I'm not going to be able to come back anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because I just can't afford it.
Did I fail you, Brie?
Well, I mean, I've been coming here all this time, and I've been paying you all this money, and why do I still want a trick? Why do I still walk by a phone and want to pick up the phone and call.
Did you think I had some magic potion? You'd come in and tell me what your problem was and I would just take it away? What's the difference between going out on a call as a model or as an actress or as a call girl? You're successful as a call girl, you're not
successful. Because when you're a call girl, you control it, that's why. Because someone wants you, not me. I mean, there are some Johns that I have regularly that want me, and that's terrific. But they want a woman, and I know I'm good. And I arrive at their hotel or their apartment. And they're usually nervous, which is fine, because I'm not. I know what I'm doing. And for an hour, I'm the best actress in the world and the best fuck in the world. And
why do you say you're the best actress in the world at that time?
Oh, because it's an act.
And he's not necessarily a big fan of improvisation, but in some cases, it sounds like he uses it to help his actors get into character. Like he'll have them do exercises that won't be used and then go into a scene. But in this case, like, I guess he shot like 2 hours or so of her just improvising with this woman in the therapy office, going off on certain things. He'd give her a little direction, I guess, and then she'd go. And he ended up using about 4 or 5 minutes of it, but I think it's really effective. I think it's so interesting to have basically what would be like inner monologue come out in, not in voiceover form, but giving us more of her inner psychology and sort of seeing what she's trying to work out and what she's struggling with. And it really brings you into the character that much more, you know?
Right. And it could have easily been cheesy or taken you out or maybe even have clashed with what she's doing otherwise in her performance.
Yeah.
But no, it's that Klute magic. It's perfect.
Yeah. Everything just comes together. It's like you said, it happens every once in a while. And then you get a great movie. And I just... yeah, more people need to see this movie. There's also a great set of interviews that I guess are being done or were being done for some kind of Pakula documentary. So you get people like Soderbergh and...
Annette Ensdorf.
Yeah. Annette Ensdorf. Yeah, she's good. Film scholar. And there's a few others in here, along with some clips of Pakula himself.
There is a magic in acting. People always ask me, well, how did you get this out of an actor? But there is a mystery about good acting which I don't even totally understand till this day. And the more I'm involved with actors, the more impressed I am when it happens. It's an intellectual, rational thing in that they know that there are certain things they have to achieve for the story. And yet really good acting is emotional, and it happens in an unconscious way, and it's totally spontaneous. It just has to happen in some way. And that's a gift.
I mean, it just gives you a sense of like what some of what he was doing, and I love Soderbergh, who's also just an incredibly 70s guy and 60s guy for that matter. And he clearly loves Pakula, like one of his favorite filmmakers, I feel like, or something, because he's got a lot of interesting things to say. Although I did notice it seemed like he had maybe a cold or something, because he sounded a little rough around the edges. But it was clear that, you know, I think this was very important to him and he wanted to be a part of it. Because Pakula means a lot to him. And he says a lot of really cool stuff. And Annette Ensdorf has all kinds of interesting things to say about like how she teaches cinema and how we have a certain idea of what auteur theory means and how it excludes certain directors that are versatile, like Pakula, because you can't necessarily get a handle on their movie immediately based on, you know, one scene or a frame or whatever, because they're that good. They don't stay in one style, you know, and that there should be room for this kind of director in auteur theory as well.
Amen. She knows what she's talking about.
She does.
I remember her, it seemed like she was on almost every DVD I used to buy, and I was actually really delighted to see her pop up on a Criterion Blu-ray because I miss seeing her.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't remember. I feel like I'd seen her somewhere too, but it's been a while. You know, it's been a while. So I was like, she looks familiar, but I couldn't tell you the last time I saw her or what it was. But great.
Yeah.
And then there's a Dick Cavett interview with Pakula. And I don't know. I really like Dick Cavett. I don't know how you feel about him.
No, I love him. I have that DVD set of him where he interviews rock stars. But I think he's a great interviewer, but they also include his monologue. And it reminded me, like, oh, yeah, he's not really known as much for his monologues as he is for his interviews.
No, that stuff isn't as good at all. In fact, it's almost like, really? They let him do this? This was, it's kind of a thing where you're just like, okay, I guess. But then he sits down to talk, right. And you're like, that sort of unassuming, low-key approach is just such a different vibe than most talk shows that it suddenly becomes not hypnotic, but engaging in a different way. Very conversational. But yeah, not a funny guy, really. To me, it's not that humorous.
He has his moments.
Yeah, no, sure. Okay, well, I think that's about it for the features. Or maybe did I miss anything?
No, there's this great interview.
Oh, yes. Talk about it.
With a woman called Amy Fine Collins. It's The Look of Clute. And she goes in depth about the clothing, mainly Jane Fonda's outfits, and really in depth about what that shows about the characters and just like really going into the aesthetics, but how that's important to both the character journey and just the emotional tone. And I'm someone, I like fashion. I appreciate good fashion, but I'm certainly not an expert. So when I hear an expert talk about it, I get really into it because I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a really intriguing talk, and she really does go deep. And she even points out some things where she notices that, you know, like you said, character stuff. Jane Fonda wears a certain dress for one particular John that she sees, and it's part of sort of a character that she's come up with. But she also notices that she talks about like what kind of dress it was and how much it would have cost and how it might have been part of that character's life before when she was like Park Avenue. But then on another level, she also talks about how Jane Fonda reused that dress later, like when she did some premiere for 9 to 5, like years later.
Right. Just still fit into it perfectly. Yeah. Didn't believe in wasting it. I love that.
That was great. It was a nice touch. It was clear that she really had done some deep research, and yeah, very enjoyable. I really liked that a lot. So good stuff. But I'm sorry, I'm just really excited to hear what you chose to pair this movie with, Steph.
Oh, I'm just going to disappoint you then.
No, you're not.
Especially since this is just the discs. And this film is in dire need of like a re-release, a new restoration, 4K, more extras.
Okay.
But it's Francis Ford Coppola's The Conversation.
Beautiful. That's a great pairing.
What are you doing here?
Take it easy.
I'm just a messenger.
Brought you a drink.
I don't want your drink. Why are you following me?
I'm not following you. I'm looking for you. It's a big difference.
How'd you know I was here?
Oh, it's a conventional wiretapper, isn't it?
Oh, excuse me. Surveillance and security technicians. It was a snap.
Look, I'm telling you, I'm not giving those tapes to anybody but the director.
Yeah, I know what you told me, Mr. Call.
All right, what's the message?
We want you to deliver the tapes on Sunday at 1 o'clock. The director will be there. He'll accept the tapes from you in person.
You tell him I'll think about it.
Because we mentioned it before, but the sound work in this and the music, it's wonderful as it is in The Conversation. But recording devices have an incredibly important part in Clute's plot, as it does in The Conversation.
Well played.
So, obvious pairing, yes, but I think both films also come at the idea of being stalked, being watched, and that paranoia. They handle it very differently with very different characters. It's almost two sides of a coin.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's not like if you like that 70s beautiful but a little bit gritty aesthetic, they'll definitely both give you that. But I don't know. I feel like The Conversation leans comfortably against its tension and suspense, and Clute kind of embraces it too tightly, like almost painfully tightly. And I just think they're fascinating to kind of compare how they deal with that, I don't know, the emotional warfare.
No, it's brilliant. It's a great pairing. And I can't believe I didn't even think about it for a second.
Oh, you did? Oh, that makes me happy.
No, and it's one of my favorite movies. So it's like, how did I miss that? It just blows me away. Yeah, no, it's great. I couldn't imagine how good of a double that would be. And yeah, that movie is one of the first movies that I think gave me an inkling of, I mean, I think I had always had a sense of like, oh, this is one of my favorite movies, or that is one of my favorite movies. But then I watched that movie, and I think it was around the same time that I saw King of Comedy. I saw a few things close together that I was like, wait a minute, this is like, this is something else. This is something that I just love on every level, and it's got a depth to it, and the performance is incredible, and it just was suddenly like my favorite movie. Like I was like, people started in college, I would say that was my favorite movie. And it's still one of my favorites, but yeah, it was one of the early ones where I was just like, this is pretty incredible. This is one for all time, you know?
Definitely.
And yeah, it's beautiful in terms of the overlap of paranoia and dread and secrecy and conspiracy and mystery. It's just,
yeah, and the violation of privacy.
Yeah.
And also how that hits you as an audience member, because there's a difference between saying Gene Hackman's character and the kind of bluster he has about how good he really is at his job versus Brie, Jane Fonda's character, who is really good at her job, but you see more of her vulnerability without that kind of, I don't know. I just think they're kind of great together. Yeah. They're like two siblings that have very little in common, but they're very fascinating together.
And it's intriguing to me because the Harry Call character, the Gene Hackman character in Conversation, he has aspects of John Clute in him. Like he's very reserved and stoic and guarded. So he kind of reminds me of Clute in some ways, but he's even more sort of walled off than either Brie or Clute.
Yeah, and he wears his frustration, anger a little closer to the surface than Clute.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, you're right. In terms of the emotion, it definitely, and irritation, there's a great bit in that movie where his landlady left something in his apartment or something, if I remember.
Yeah, it's like a birthday present.
Yes, yes. She leaves him a birthday present and he just flips out.
How'd you get it?
Hello? Hello, Miss Evangelista? Yes, this is Harry Call from upstairs. Yes. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Uh-huh. Yes, well, you're really very nice. Yes. But I know, yes, I found it, yes. But what I wanted to talk to you about was, how did you put it in the apartment? Uh-huh. Right. Well, what about the alarm? Oh, you did? Well, yes, I thought I had the only key. Well, what emergency could possibly... All right. Yes. See, I would be perfectly happy to have all my personal things burned up in a fire because I don't have anything personal. Nothing of value. No, nothing personal except my keys, you see. Yes, which I really would like to have the only copy of, Miss Evangelista. Miss Evangelista, how'd you know it was my birthday? Nah... I don't remember telling you. Would you like to take a guess how old I am? 44. Well, that's a very good guess. Miss Evangelista, as of today, my mail will go to a post office box with a combination on it and no keys. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's just like a classic character-defining moment where you're like, he does not give a shit about your present. You're in his place. You fucking... Don't do that with Harry Call. God, that's so good. See, you know what this does? It throws off the dynamic for me a little bit because I was going to do... I think I told you before that I had my like correct double pairing, and then I had the one that I chose, which is like kind of goofy or fun. But now I feel like I can't even go with that one, the goofy one. I just have
Come
to...
Come on.
No. I can tell you what it is. I'm not going to hide it. But... My initial thought was Night Moves. So we double up on Gene Hackman.
Wow.
Which kind of works great.
My old man.
Was he really so unlike you when you met him?
I never met him.
But I thought you stayed with him. You told me for a week.
Well, you know, I was really pretty proud of myself. The way I tracked him down, I followed all the clues. Followed from job to job, city to city. I finally found him in Baltimore. Some rooming house on Hibiscus Avenue. Went up to the door. There was a little card there. Had his name on it. And somebody pointed him out to me. He was in the park on a bench sitting there. This little old guy reading the funny pages out of the paper. Mouthing the words with his lips. I just sit there for a while and watched and then went away.
Why did you never tell me this?
I don't know. Just something I wasn't terribly proud of, you know. Hey. Standing 6 feet away from my father and then just walking away. The trouble is, after the first 6 feet, it's hard to tell whether or not you're jumping or you're falling. No.
So yeah, that's the thing, is like once you said that, then I'm like, well, it's gotta be Night Moves. It's gotta be, that has to be what I choose, because I still think it works incredibly well, and I still think it also carries a lot of that dark paranoid weight. Not quite as much as The Conversation. The Conversation's actually a better fit even. But I still feel like Night Moves is really great in terms of, you know, that sort of 70s post-noir pastiche feeling. It's even more of a postmodern thing than Clued and The Conversation. Those are just, I mean, they're postmodern in their own ways. Like The Conversation is obviously a response to Blow Up, you know, and so it's that sort of thing. But yeah, Night Moves is, it's a detective movie. It's Gene Hackman plays Harry Mosby. He plays Harry Call and Harry Mosby. And he is an ex-football player who has started his own detective agency, and he is struggling a little bit, but he occasionally gets work from this bigger detective agency that's he could go work for, but he doesn't want to because he sees it as like an information factory. And so basically he gets a job trying to find this old starlet's daughter, played by Melanie Griffith, and it becomes this sort of labyrinthine thing of tracking her down. And I think that was the thing that I was tying to it too, was that, you know, the center of the case is a woman, and, you know, there's a sense of protecting her a little bit, but she's also sort of fiercely independent in her own way. Melanie Griffith's character, that is. I think it's a really early role for her, and she's pretty fantastic in it. But yeah, now I'd love to see like a triple bill of like Clute. I think you should start with A Conversation, go to Clute, and then Night Moves. So we have like a checker pattern of Gene Hackman through the evening.
Yeah.
I think that'd be better.
Call up the new Bev tomorrow and like make it happen. That'd be awesome.
Use my connections. So that would be, I think, my ideal. But I think, like you say, The Conversation is really pretty sharp. Well done.
Thank you.
I take my hat off to you, ma'am. I'll briefly talk about what my other pairing was going to be.
Okay. Can I just say something really quick?
Oh, say whatever you want.
When you just said I take my hat off to you, I did imagine you wearing a little Popeye Doyle hat. And you see that? I love Gene Hackman. I love how much he's suddenly come up. So.
Oh, he's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
He really is. And watching Night Moves again this week, I've seen it probably like 6 or 7 times now.
Wow.
I suddenly realized, well, I knew it was one of my favorite movies, but, and this is going to be controversial, I think it might have just passed The Long Goodbye, which is pretty crazy, because The Long Goodbye was forever in my top, you know, 4 or 5 movies, and I think Night Moves might have just leapfrogged over it. So that was a revelation to me. I was just like, I really love The Long Goodbye, but I think I like this movie more. And it was kind of alarming. And I can't believe I just admitted it on air, because I feel like I'm going to get some hate mail for that. But
well, that's good. They'll get more listens. They'll get angry. You'll get letters, because people still send letters.
Oh, yeah. I get them all the time. Mailbox is stuffed full. Angry letters. All right. So here's, real briefly before we close this out, here's what I was going to do. I still think this could be interesting, but I think the classy move is, and the way you've gone, you know, inspired me to stay the other way. But the pick I was going with was The Seduction from 1982, I believe.
If you were the object of one man's obsession, if he invaded your public world.
Good evening. I'm Jamie Douglas, and this is the 6 o'clock report.
If he threatened your private world.
Please.
And if he made you feel alone, terrified, and cornered like an animal, what would you do to stop The Seduction? Morgan Fairchild, Andrew Stevens, The Seduction. Rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
This is David Schmoller's film, the director of Tourist Trap.
Oh, okay.
And have you seen this one?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so this is, it's kind of sleazy. It's De Palma adjacent, but it's like he does an okay job of doing a De Palma type story without obviously the style of De Palma. Like, it's not an unstylized film or approach, but you can't out-stylize De Palma. I mean, come on. But so the story is basically that Morgan Fairchild plays a TV news anchor, and she has a stalker played by Andrew Stevens. And it's the story of how he gradually becomes more and more obsessed with her and starts getting more and more into her business. And it gets pretty freaky and pretty uncomfortable in parts. And he really plays it pretty crazy good in terms of the creepness of it, because he's got like a boyish quality about him. But I don't know, Morgan Fairchild is really pretty great in this movie, I gotta say. And there's a certain, without giving too much away, there's a certain turnabout towards the end that is an interesting switcheroo for a genre movie. So I like it. I think you could call it like, there's some kind of a double bill to be had there in terms of the women with agency kind of stalked kind of thing, something like that. I don't know. It's not as good as what we've come up with outside of it, but I thought it would be an interesting double feature to watch. It might be a little cheesy, but there's some part of me that thinks sometimes when you watch a movie that's pretty heavy, like Clute, you might be open to something a little lighter. And this has some of both. It has some darker parts, and then it has some parts that might play more entertaining. If you know what I mean. So,
well, you talk to me into wanting to see it. So,
I'm curious what you think. It gets, like I said, it gets a little uncomfortable, but I like what she does, and I like where the character goes. And they have an interview with her on the Scream Factory Blu-ray. I think this was one that Jeff Nelson himself is a big fan of, and that's the reason that they put it out. But they talked to Morgan Fairchild, and hearing especially her point of view on the whole thing and the project and why she did it, I think always helps me with movies where I feel uncomfortable for the female lead. Like, I feel like she's put in some pretty tough positions in the movie, and to hear her talk about it really opened it up for me to appreciate the movie more. So anyway, I still think the conversation, you nailed it. Way to go, Steph. I can't believe you thought that I wasn't going to like that. That's nuts. That's so great.
Well, you're a tough crowd, I thought. Oh, way to go for the obvious blockbuster choice, Stephanie.
Blockbuster. No, I still, you're right. I mean, you know, you make a good point in that there isn't a great Blu-ray of it. The Blu-ray that's out has the commentary, which is good. And maybe somebody somewhere is like, oh, we already did a special edition. It's got the commentary on it. But I really feel like somebody should be doing, I mean, it's a Criterion movie begging to be in the collection. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, why is it not? I don't understand. And maybe it's because it's a Paramount movie, and I don't think they've done as much work with Paramount now that I think about it. But I feel like there are some Paramount movies in there somewhere. So
there's gotta
be. I don't know.
Well, we're yeah. speaking into the universe right now. So hopefully yes. we'll see it announced next year.
That would be amazing.
They finally announced my beloved, not Criterion, but just a Blu-ray for The Bad and the Beautiful. So
yes.
I'm starting to believe in some things again.
Just putting stuff out in the universe?
A little bit.
That's good. No, that's good. Well, Steph, thank you so much. Always wonderful to talk to you. Always wonderful to get your insights.
Always wonderful to talk to you.
I'm glad we did this. We are working on another episode. Anyway, so thanks again, Steph. We'll be doing another episode yet at some point relatively soon, I think. As soon as your Criterion package comes in the mail.
Ooh.
Just a little
thanks,
hint.
Flash sale.
Yes. But anyway, everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week, and we'll talk to you very soon. Bye.